This is Icon Art Radio with me, Bill Teeple, and my co-host, Alan Cobb, and today's special guest is Denise Gallagher. I have to say that I was blown away last night. If you're hearing this show for the first time in, where are we in time and space? We're in January.
Today's January 2011.
2011, the new year. And if this is a repeat show, it wasn't last night, but for us.
Yeah,
so if you're hoping to go back in time just 24 hours and experience the show, you'll find that it's not there.
It's evaporated, yeah.
In any case, last night at our Odd Thursday, Denise gave a presentation all about her trip to New Zealand. And you might think, oh, someone's coming to show slides of her trip to somewhere. And it wasn't like that. It was an encapsulation of a mythic journey. And we just want you to talk a little bit about what drew you to New Zealand and what brought all this about, and talk a little bit about your experience, because it was more like an art piece in my mind and a performance than just some touristing. I'll have to say that we've never drawn so many people to our
Denise, like,
we had the whole place packed.
Wow.
70 people. So we're going to do it again.
Yay.
And we'll let you know.
Beautiful.
Well, tell us a little about this whole thing. How did it all come
about? Well, thanks, Bill. yeah, it was absolutely thrilling for me last night to have the ability to share something that was so profoundly fulfilling, just the experience of doing the trip, planning the trip, and then being able to share it, that full circle of completion.
Yeah.
So how it came about, I'd have to say it goes back almost 30 years. So I would say the early 80s, I first encountered the artist Hunter Wasser, who is an Austrian artist. And he was infatuated with New Zealand. And when I got a book of his work, and in it I had read many years ago about how he had viewed New Zealand as the what he considered the last earthly paradise. For him, I'm looking at some of the writing here. For him, it offered the possibility of a life which was still essentially natural. And for him, this natural life was synonymous with a creative life. And at that point in time, I'd already finished art school and I was an art teacher. And I started wondering, you know, was this real? I mean, here, this is the artist that I just loved his whole approach to life. I mean, he was a total... I don't know. His idea of how life should be, that should be totally integrated with nature, that, you know, even to the extent that there should be no, you know, right angles in buildings, or, you know, plants, trees should be growing even on top of a building. I loved his philosophy, let's put it that way. So there was this gestation of this idea in me that went back many years. And then over time, every time I'd hear about New Zealand, it would pique my interest. I'd go, what is it about New Zealand? Okay, and then there was, obviously, Lord of the Rings came out, and I was like, oh boy, now everybody's going to go to New Zealand. This is my country. You know, this is
wanted to go there first.
I wanted to go there first. I wanted
before
to
they
before
ruined
the
it.
Whole and exactly. But and then I had close friends who went there to live about 7 years ago, and they kept telling me stories. And it, you know, it's interesting. I think about things that you desire to do in your life, and there's things that seem like they flow naturally. New Zealand felt like an exceptional journey for me because here it was on the other side of the world, you know, below the equator, you know, just there. You know, I've been to Europe many times and lived over there, and that seemed totally natural to go to Europe. You know, for me, New Zealand had that sort of mythical, magical quality because it was so far away, for one thing, and I wasn't quite sure how I would manage it. You know, and I've been thinking about this, just there's a difference in this kind of impulse for me. It went really deeply. It wasn't just a curiosity. I felt like there was a deep longing for something that what that represented to me. So I think in that way, it felt like a mythic journey. It felt very exceptional to do, very challenging. There was something about it that I wanted for myself. I could feel that there was some aspect of my life that I could experience there that I had not yet experienced, if that makes sense. So, yeah. I mean, I could say more about that, but it's, you know, I remember one time during one of your Icon Radio talks, you talked about the role of the artist about going into the underworld and bringing back gifts. And that's really what this felt like for me. And gifts primarily in the sense of what had not been fully experienced already in my life. You know, being able to see aspects of myself that I had kind of shut down or closed off. So these are the gifts that I was able to experience myself in a different way. And so in that sense, it felt like, you know, yeah, you could call it mythic journey, heroine's journey, you know, an artistic exploration in the sense that I was looking to feel a fullness of experience, of life, of and I wanted to live more freely, more spontaneously, more openly, in the moment, trusting my intuition, trusting my being, moving me through the world. And, you know, it's something that now I wonder, you know, just how do I integrate that now? So that's the most
interesting part at this point. We'll talk more about that. But you really did it.
Yeah.
I mean, you took a heroine's journey. And
I missed the show, unfortunately. So can you say something about what it is that is different from just showing a bunch of slides? I'm thinking of the radio audience hearing thinking, okay.
Well, the thing is that this is what I was thinking as you were talking, mm-hmm. that you you use this as a vehicle to take a heroine's journey. Now, anyone else would go to New Zealand and they would see the sights and they take the pictures and they come back and show some slides. That's a surface level kind of thing.
Right.
But
right.
you approached it as a mythic journey and you did it. And you did the whole 9 yards, as far as I can tell. You beforehand, you sort of glimpsed through a spyglass, the mythic realm. And then you took whatever magic it took to get it together so that you could do it and then go down the chute to this place. You did it. And then she took each day, she named each day and what she had packed into that as a kind of like an exploration of the mythic realm. And it was obvious that you were high. The whole time. No, I mean, it was obvious.
Literally.
The pictures of her and now when she talks about it and the thing she wrote that we sent out that got my attention about how she felt about this thing. It was a completely different than somebody going on a tourist journey. It was a mythic journey. And what she did is what was so the archetype is she came back with the boon from the mythic realm that healed the people back in Fairfield in 2011. Because really, you went to timeless place outside of 2011 in this world. Maybe everybody else there thought they were in 2011 in New Zealand, but you went to another place that was inside, that place resonated with, and it was able to emerge and be given birth. And then I don't know how you did it. You took such incredible pictures and put them together in such a beautiful and sensitive way. And you brought that back and you delivered it to the people back here in Fairfield in 2011. And the way that people responded, it was that thing that they were healed. It was a group, a ritual performance where the artist comes back from his mythic journey and brings the boon that reconnects the people and the whole thing. And I watched it happen from you sending out that first little notice that I thought, whoa, this is, she's doing this. She's trying to set up moving through time and space as a mythic journey. And then she brought us back the product and you did it. I was very inspired and I still am. And now the most interesting thing, and we can talk some here about that, but probably you and I and all of us in the future will talk about how I'm sure that mythic place has, because it isn't New Zealand, has been enlivened in you and has come mm-hmm. back here with you. And now what are we going to do with that?
Yeah.
We won't make Good that question. A stress, but we, I think it's, you're never going to be the same. And what you have to offer as an artist will never be the same. For one thing, maybe we can show some of your mythic drawings that hadn't been shown until last night. She does, you know, things, drawings that are like within the bounds of acceptable kind of like normal art, and you always have, and you always felt mm-hmm. sort of obliged to do that. But along with that, she would be working in her mythic realm, which is, of all the people I know, your mythic realm is more lively and expressed than most mm-hmm. already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you did drawings that you and I sort of worked through together, but mm-hmm. you pulled out from that place and delivered. And there are little packages of poetic mythic imagery that are very your images, your stuff mm-hmm. inside mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. your thing. I mean, how you're structured subconsciously.
Yeah.
And you would give expression to that. And mm-hmm. I was so inspired. And then she started her journey of slides with some of her drawings. And you could see that, and she held this thing that you were holding in your drawings, this dear thing that you held to your breast, that was your heart's desire.
Yes.
And I felt that that's the way you felt about your journey to New Zealand. You were
Absolutely.
Holding this deer, and then you set the whole thing up mythically in the beginning with those drawings, and then you did it. And then the cloud things, I don't really want to give it away, but the cloud images as you came back, it's like you passed through the celestial realms of billowing, effulgent light and clouds to come back to Fairfield. I was moved.
Wow.
So no, go ahead. Keep talking.
Well, thank you, Bill.
Yeah.
Because I think there's things that you can know, but you don't even know how to articulate it to yourself, but you just know it. And you said it. That's it, exactly. You know, and I was thinking about even this whole journey, the difference between knowing something with your mind and then dropping deeper into a spirit's longing, your own soul's longing, you know, and it's just not something that you can even argue with. It's just there, and it's your own soul wanting expression, and that's what leads you on that mythic journey. And I think, you know, when you talk about how I set it up, I wanted this, you know, I really considered a small film. It wasn't really a slideshow of pictures. I mean, it was a small
right.
film. And I set it up that I wanted people to feel that sense of this longing that endured for a long time, which I nurtured it very slowly and lovingly. And, you know, for people who know me, I have a very structured life working at the hospital. To take this time off was really enormous and very atypical for what people usually do who work in my position. So it took a long time to manage that. So in this little film, I'm holding, you know, this like you said, it was that desire and just so tenderly. And the life force that for me, you know, I use a snake to represent that, which is not so unusual, but if you see the pictures, you see it is quite unusual how I depict it. And, you know, the coming back through the clouds. Yeah, I mean, there was this sense of coming back through, you know, a whole other, celestial realm. Yeah, I mean, I set it to the music of Enya, May It Be. And in that song, you know, she's talking about, may you find this evening star that allows you to follow your heart's, you know, desire, basically. And so, yeah, as I was doing it, I have to say, I was so moved that I would just break down into tears doing the film. And, you know, and people came up to me afterwards, and a couple people said that they, you know, were just in tears. I mean,
no, you've slipped into some kind of a dharmic thing here.
Yeah.
So don't think too much about it. Just keep doing it. But what's an inspiration to me is that you did this journey, because it's very much the Hobbit ring thing. I mean, when Bilbo left the Shire and went off on the adventure, he didn't want to go out adventuring, but it was the ring, of course, is such a classic, epic, true myth because it has all the elements. And this, we so, you know, this, that you had to break through so much to do this thing is a mm-hmm. testament to your, you know, whatever, that fortitude and courage, because it's a courageous thing to go questing.
Uh-huh.
What the knights did, go out questing, and you did it. You went out questing, and most people are playing it safe and staying in their little hobbit holes in this world. And I'm sure the people at the hospital and stuff thought, what, you know. There's probably lots of good reasons why you shouldn't go off for a month and just leave this your position and your responsibilities. All of these things that say you shouldn't do this thing,
right,
that you had to, and it's inspirational.
Yeah, yeah. And but you know, what's interesting is I think it does touch that a mythic place in other people, because
absolutely.
There was this sense of like, you're serious? You're going to be traveling like alone? You're going to be driving a car by yourself on the left side of the road? I mean, you know, there were lots of sort of jabs from my coworkers that showed that they were, you know, kind of in a way sort of irritated with me. But then after a period of time, you know, they would say, you know, we're just really jealous.
No,
you know, and I would just turn to them and I'd say, then you do this, you know? And, you know, and I think that because it really is, you know, it's sort of a typical common thing to hear people talk about, you know, seize that, you know, what it is in you that is truly you, and be willing to dare to live that, you know. And I just thought, okay, I'm tired of just, you know, pretending to be me. I want to really be me and do what really feeds me. And it's like the response now, everyone is softened, you know, they're just like, oh, wow, you know. I mean, today at work, you know, several people said, we want you to show this to the whole staff, you know, and so all of a sudden I feel like I've become a motivational speaker, you know, but it's like stepping into a role that actually...
Yeah, you didn't plan to be in this role, but now you are.
Yeah.
And so you're giving other people courage to find their heart's desire, which of course you know is my whole thing.
Yeah.
So thank you for helping me in this thing that we're doing together. Also, there are those who will never do it. You know, they will never go off on their thing because they're just sort of clinging too much to their little safety zone.
Or they don't know what it would be.
Right, but what I'm saying is that her doing this has unlocked something for these people, even if they never will go anywhere. She has unlocked something today in those people that came last night from her job and saw this. Their life is now, that mythic thing has been unlocked to some extent for them, even right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even they'll be pushed a little bit to try to locate more what their heart's desire is and how to accomplish that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd like to share a little bit just how the preparation for this. I mean, there was the lead up and the planning, but one thing I did share last night is that the preparation to do this trip really involved tuning into all the different aspects of myself. And I think typically when you do a trip, you think, okay, well, I have this sort of outline and, you know, things will come up and I'll decide what to do. But I did a lot of quiet, just reflection. And there were times when I mean, those of you who know me know that I'm very active in my church life and in the Circle of Sophia. And, you know, there were times even when I'd be in church and I'd just all of a sudden start scrawling down, okay, 3 days here, 2 days here. I mean, it was not like a mental plan. It was one of these sort of really quiet, intuitive things. You know, I would I would look at the whole map of the country and I would just find where my attention would go. And then I would sit quietly and then words would come to me. You know, they would just spontaneously come. And then I would look again. I go, oh, okay. You know, and how I ended up doing the Banks Peninsula track. A track is a trail. That's what they call them over there. I had met somebody through couch surfing who lived in Australia. And couch surfing is, you know, people all over the world who are willing to open up their home to you for a night. And then you become involved in this network of people. And she said, if you're going to New Zealand, you must meet this artist, Ian Robertson. So I started checking out Ian and emailing him and looking at his work. And I thought, yeah, I want to meet this guy. And he, on his little profile page, it said that he lived near this town called Akaroa, where the dolphins play. And so I checked out Akaroa, and then it turns out there was this particular trail that basically there's these four cottages, and every night you stay in a different cottage. I looked all over New Zealand, and that was the place that really attracted me. And really, it was one of those things where I thought, I just felt, you know, there's, I think when you're actually in, you know, in that mythic journey, it's like those little clues come to you in ways just you just can't predict. And my, I found that it was like I just needed to just really be receptive to all these tiny little the input that would come, and that one thing would lead to another to another. And you know, it's just, it was amazing. I mean, if you were to see my itinerary, it was really this big jigsaw puzzle. I mean, all these people that I was connecting with and people who were picking me up and taking me places and here, and they all did what they said they were going to do. And it was just this, you know, I had, every day I looked, was I going to have time where I could be with nature? You know, were there times where I could really, because that was, I have to say, because of my love of Hundertwasser, mm-hmm. I wanted to experience nature there. And I knew, I mean, I had read that it, you know, 60% of the plant forms and trees and whatnot are just not found anywhere else. And so I already knew that it was going to be a mythical place because of that. And so I thought, I want to experience this very unusual landscape, and so that was a big part of it. And then there was other things that I knew I wanted to experience, like their wearable art museum and the Lord of the Rings tours, and you know, of course, you know, the Shire where they filmed the Lord of the Rings, the Hobbiton part. I spent 4 nights there on a farm, and I spent a lot of time walking around and driving that landscape because it spoke to me. And, you know, I don't, that's the thing that I think, you know, if I could say to people, there are certain landscapes that actually go with your, as Alan would say, your resonant frequency, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it, your own, for me, my body responds to certain landscapes. And I felt that some in Tuscany, and it was a similar kind of thing in this area that they call Waikato, which is where they filmed the Hobbit part. The hills there are, they're undulating. And so it's like seeing green waves. You know, it's even more wave-like than what I experienced in Italy. And it was like my whole being was going, ah, you know, I'm feeling in my body exactly what I'm seeing in, with my eyes. It was totally harmonious, mm-hmm. you know. Bill's shaking his head over there. and I knew that, you know, I kept saying, oh, okay, I need to go here. You know, I mean, my friend who lives in New Zealand, she's like, oh, you could see this site or this site. And I said, I want to see that landscape. And I knew I wanted to see the kauri trees. And I wanted to be, you know, in the deep woods, and the Banks Peninsula had a lot of really deep forests that I could spend time with and just...
Where was the huge ancient tree? Because that really got me. It really, that felt totally mythical.
Oh, absolutely. Well, these, again...
Was it the Maori area?
Yeah, in the Northland, north of Auckland, there's something that they call the Northland that's more populated by Maoris up there. And along the coast and somewhat inland, they have these, they're called kauri, K-A-U-R-I. And again, this is a tree that's only found in New Zealand. So they're really, they're majestic. They're very different than experiencing a sequoia or a redwood. I've been in California twice in the last year, and it's very different experience. We figured it was about 20 feet across. So the diameter was 20 feet across, roughly.
That's the trunk of the tree.
That's the trunk, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this particular tree that Bill's talking about is called Tane Mahuta. They're trees, the oldest ones and the tallest ones they actually have names for. Mm-hmm. Tane Mahuta means Lord of the Forest. And, you know, there was a friend who was willing to take me around in the North Country, and the first day we went to see some kauri trees, and I mean, they were remarkable. But the next day he said, well, so, you know, would you like to go to see this harbor? And I said, well, we're going to be near Tane Mahuta. I want to see Tane Mahuta. Mm-hmm. And he kind of looked at me like, wait a second, we've already seen kauris. Tane Mahuta was actually, I felt the being alive in that tree. Mm. And this is actually...
Well, the photo alone was very powerful.
Yeah.
I thought it felt completely different from any big tree I'd ever seen. It seemed like an ancient being.
Yes. Yes. It is.
Something.
Well, yeah. I think we'll have to show it again, Bill. What do you
think? Oh, we will. You and I will figure out. We'll have a special showing, not just an odd Thursday, I think, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that would be great.
Beautiful.
I'm sorry I missed it. I'm looking forward
okay,
to it.
Alan.
Yes. We'll play it just for Alan.
You must come, yes.
Well, thank you for sharing this with us. It was fantastic.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.